Yeah, baby.
Here we go. We're going live right now.
The Killer Bees are counting down to Texans training camp.
Here we go. Tackle football. Let's play.
With a top 10 storylines of the Houston Texans season.
Houston Texans training camp opens tomorrow. Cody Stutes, we were just talking about shirts on or off. Stutes going to be out at Texans training camp
shirt
tomorrow.
Off.
Rumors tell me, shirt off.
Shirt off.
Bucket hat, short shorts, Paul Gallant shorts. Paul's letting Cody borrow some of his shorts, and then flip-flops is what I understand Stutes is going to be wearing tomorrow
as
at Texans
armband?
Training camp. That's what I hear Stutes is wearing tomorrow at Texans training camp. Opens tomorrow, which is very exciting. The NFL right around the corner. I've seen videos of dudes throwing touchdown passes to other dudes running around in their shells and just really, really excited about it all. But the Houston Texans camp opens tomorrow, 2022. We've been counting down every day at 1 o'clock our top 10 storylines of the 2022 season. Today is number 2 on our top 10 storylines. We want to have the report card for the rebuild. Where in the rebuild are the Texans really? Don't tell Nick Caserio he said that. He hates the word rebuild for whatever reason. But where are the Texans with the rebuild that Nick Caserio has been tasked with?
Where are they in the rebuild?
Mm-hmm.
They are not on ground level. They are not below ground level. But they are in the fetal stages of their development and return to glory.
Yes. That confident?
Yeah, well, you know, it depends on what size the market is. This, we're talking about just, are you a playoff team? Are you a division champion? Are you going for more than that? I believe that they are in the fetal stages, but going in the right direction of positivity towards a return to glory. Why are you pausing like that?
I'm curious.
You're just taking it all in?
Yeah, return to glory. Like, at what point? Like,
when is glory coming? When you start becoming AFC South champions again in multiple years and winning playoff games, damn it. Until then, we suck too, bro.
I watched that video today, actually. I watched the You Suck Too.
You Suck Too, bro?
Yeah, the Bill O'Brien.
That was a Denver game, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. But I don't know. I can't remember why I started watching that today. But I watched the YouTube today of Bill O'Brien walking to. My favorite part is when he pointed at the dude. The fan yelling at him, "You suck, Bill O'Brien." And Bill O'Brien says, bad word, you suck too. But he says, "You suck too," twice. And on the second, "You suck too," he does a 180 turn and double finger points him as he says that "You suck too," which I found to be very, very funny.
Yep.
But anyways, Bill O'Brien, very much a huge influence of the reason of where the Texans are, where they are. And as you asked, we asked the question, where in the rebuild are the Texans really? I think you nailed it, right? Like, the Texans still have a good, like, they have a long way to go. Brendan doesn't like it whenever we say that the long way can be 3 years. He says that things can happen faster in the NFL, which, even if he's right, you still have a long way to go. You still have a lot of holes on where this team is at. Now, I've liked what Nick Caserio, for the most part, has done to this point of the rebuild. He's had to tear down the entire organization. We've compared it to renovating a house, renovating a building. You got to do the demo. You got to turn. You got to take everything out. You got to rip everything down to its studs and then rebuild it from the ground up. He's done the demo part. He's gotten rid of the bad contract. He's gotten rid of the old players. He's brought in some of the young players that are going to be foundational pieces for this organization. But you still have the hard work to do. I think it's easy to trade Deshaun Watson when you have people not banging on your door for Deshaun Watson. To your point, I think that he managed the situation very well. I think it's easy to get out of, you cut a player, okay? How do you get out of bad contracts? You cut them, you trade them. Like, that's not a very difficult thing to do. What is going to be hard for this rebuild is identifying players in the draft, how you spend the money, because Texans are going to have a lot of money coming off the books next year. Like, their cap space next year is one of the best in the entire NFL. How you're spending that while also not mortgaging the future is going to be very interesting for Nick Caserio. All the hard work is still to come. You still don't know what you are at the quarterback position. Some people love Davis Mills. They think he has a chance to be Kirk Cousins or Derek Carr. They think he has a chance to be a top 15 quarterback. We would say, is that good enough? But there's people that think that he could be the guy. But even those people, you don't know yet. We're going to find out more in the 2023 season. We don't know if the Texans have their quarterback yet. I would argue right now that they do not. Maybe Davis Mills changes the topic of conversation there. There are some young players on this team that I really like that are going to be here for hopefully a very long time. Derek Stingley Jr., right? Let's just go through the draft class. Jalen Petrie, Kenyon Green, Christian Harris. And I like the young players. I like what Caserio's done in that regard. I think that whenever we talk about where the Texans are going and that the arrow is pointing up and it's trending in an upward direction, which is a good thing for where this organization has been, I think that we like to tell people that, hey, let's hesitate a little bit. Let's pump the brakes a little bit on where this is going. And, like, don't watch the Texans in 2022 like you weren't watching the Rockets last season with, let's win a lot of games, or you expect them to win a lot of games. Maybe they surprise you. But the expectation shouldn't be, I'm going to watch the Texans this year hoping they get to 8 wins or 9 wins. The expectation and what should bring you enjoyment watching the Houston Texans is watching the young players
develop. Development of the young players, knowing that this train is going down the track and the light at the end of the tunnel isn't one coming the other way. It's going to run your ass over. It's the fact that you're making progress, that these rookies that you drafted are going to continue to progress to be key pieces to your foundation. The fact that you're going to get extra picks coming up next year from the Browns is going to be more elements, like you mentioned, that you can't miss on, that you need to find players that are going to fortify the rest of the roster. And then when you start looking at your different position groups, Nick Caserio's tough charges, hey, I am charged with the responsibility of trying to make sure I don't overspend, but I do add to those position groups that I wasn't able to add to in the draft. For example, this last season, you added in a lot of areas, but one that you did not add to, that you don't need to for this year because you're not there yet, is tight end. But if you look at tight end a year from now and you haven't drafted a tight end and you continue to add everywhere else, now you need to go out into the market and find a serviceable young tight end that's probably better than serviceable, but also that you're not going to overspend for, but that fortifies your roster and helps your offense a little bit more. That's just one example. You have to look around the football field and say, hey, look, I know there's competition for these guys in free agency. I'm not there yet. I'm not going to overspend, give too many years and too much money. But I know that there are other areas my team still needs help that they might not be looking at as hard. There might be plenty of guys on the market. I'm going to get one of those guys. And at a certain point, when you take that next step, then you're going to start looking to spend a little more, mm-hmm. being able to make a bigger commitment because you're going to get a bigger return on your investment.
I think the next steps, too, in the rebuild is, like, first and foremost, it's the draft. Like, mm-hmm. to win in the NFL, I think to win in almost all sports, you have to build through the draft, and you have to hit on a lot of those young players. And basketball is a little bit different, I think. Like, if there's one sport that I think is a little different than all the others, I think basketball would be put on that list. But, like, the Texans are going to have to hit on their draft picks to really, like, expedite the rebuild. They're going to have to hit more than they missed. Dingley's going to need to be good, except all those rookies. But as you start to look ahead to the next steps of what's coming up for the Houston Texans in the rebuilding process, because a lot of people are, like, excited for football season. Go win, Texans. 8 wins, yay. You need to be able to hit on the rookies, but then also, like, how you spend the money is very critical. Because if you're, like, the Texans 40-ish million under the salary cap for next season, if you go, you know, spend all of that on one veteran, I would seriously have questions on what Nick Caserio is doing. Because Nick Caserio to this point has seemingly been on one path. And the path is we're looking at the long term. We always point to the press conference he had ahead of the season last year. Look at the process. Don't look at the results. The process have all told us the same message. I'm not sure I've seen Nick Caserio do one thing where I think, okay, he's not looking at the long term. This is like fifth rounder for Anthony Miller aside, sixth rounder for Ryan Finley aside. Like, those are kind of head scratching decisions, but they're a fifth, sixth rounder, whatever. Like, he seemingly has a big plan for this organization, a broad plan where it's long term. He's not looking for the short term success. And one area where I think you could say, okay, Cal McNair, this is a positive with you as the Houston Texan CEO, owner, whatever you want to call him, is that he's willing to give Nick Caserio a runway to where, okay, you're not going to have pressure to win 8 games this year or 9 wins the year after that, because now you're in a situation where you have Matt Rhule trading for mediocre quarterbacks to try to save his job. I think it's a good thing that an owner gives a general manager a long leash. And on the secondary part of that, I think it's good that Nick Caserio has the long-term plan ahead of the short-term.
Well, you know, having job security means a lot, and I think that that factors in as well. But having Cal be clueless in this case is a good thing because with him being clueless, he can get the hell out of the way and let Nick do his job. And as Nick does his job, I think that the barometer shouldn't be, and we keep continuing to harp on this, the barometer isn't wins and losses. It's the progression of the players you've drafted, of the guys you've found, of the people you've signed, and the fact that you see, even from a head coaching perspective, Lovey is able to control the locker room, and it's not too big for him on game days. The roster of young draft picks gets better. They are starters. They are contributing, and you know they're going to be here and do that for multiple years. the guys that you bring in, whether, you know, it be in the running back room or if you need an extra receiver now or wherever you're going to add, like the defensive secondary you already did with Nelson. You look at those things and those guys and say, hey, look, did they make an impact on the field? Great. Did they show that they have plenty left in the tank? Excellent. Do you want them to come back next season? Fantastic, because that's not what you've been and that's not what your mentality has been with veteran players in years past. And then, like I said, pace yourself because you don't need to do it. Rome wasn't built in a day. You don't need to spend all $40 million in 1 year, but you need to realize when I do get to the point where I need it, I've got it. I'm not going to overspend and put myself in a bind financially when I know I'm ready to take that next big step and I'm going to have to tap into free agency. And that's part of what a general manager's job is, too, is to kind of structure it so that you don't overspend in the short term, so you have money for the long term, but you still are helping your team, you know, do what they need to do to be successful.
Now, the money that the Texans have, we think that, okay, you're going to use that in free agency to an extent in terms of signing young players that can be part of the long-term plan. What about if you're using that financial, you know, advantage that you have by clearing this cap space to get a Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill guy, where you're, okay, we'll trade for a top-end wide receiver. Maybe you're using one of those first-rounders or an early second to acquire that guy and then pay him the money that you have built up to help out a Davis Mills, to help out a rookie quarterback. Would you be okay if they went that route?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's all about the intelligent decision, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that you also have to kind of wait what the importance of different positions and what they bring to your team, right? Because every team's different. We talked about it. You know, you could go out and draft a safety in the draft, but the defense that Lovie plays, it's not ideal to have an impact player play the type of safety if you were going to draft a safety that high in the first round in that year's draft. So you weight them and you pay them accordingly. But if there's a guy that fits all your criteria in terms of age and athleticism, injury history, and the ability to possibly get better, and you feel like that's a guy that I'm going to add to my roster that's going to be a part of this long term, I have to put all my eggs in the basket of Caserio is in that job and he knows what he's doing.
Yep.
And if he's willing to do that, then I'm willing to support it.
You want to get a lay of the land, right? Reevaluate where you are. If you're in 2023 and that's the best option, you do it. Texans aren't there right now. 713-780-ESPN. How would you grade the rebuild report card for Nick Caserio? Where in the rebuild are the Texans really? 713-780-3776, our HRMP listener line. All right, I got a question for you next, you Blankers, you Brendan, also the Hive. Is there more hate for the Texans in this city than any other NFL city for their hometown team? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, I was having a conversation the other day with somebody, and a Houston guy, has been in Houston his entire life, loves Houston sports. He told me, "I hate the Texans." I was like, whoa, I was a little taken aback, because it's like one thing to be disappointed with the Texans. It's one thing to not like and hate can somewhat be the same thing, just a little stronger. It's one thing to kind of be,
like you rubbed the wrong way or something.
Annoyed, disappointed. Apathy about the Texans. Like, I understand all of those things. You're not happy with where they are.
You could be pissed off.
Mad.
The DeAndre Hopkins trade alone could piss a lot of people off.
This sounds like therapy now with all these buzzwords. But
pissed off is not a buzzword, I don't think.
Mad. That's an emotion. That's definitely that's a feel for sure. But to have hate for the Houston Texans when you're a Houston guy, you're a Houston sports fan, you love the city of Houston. I was taken aback by that. I don't know that I necessarily like. I don't hate the Texans, but I started to ask myself the question. Like, I wonder how many people in the city of Houston people that are listening to us are obviously sports fans, right? You're a Houstonian. You love the Astros, you love the Rockets, you still might even follow the Texans, maybe you're an Oilers fan back in the day. Do you hate the Texans? And is there more hate in this city for the local NFL franchise than any other city? Because, like, I point to Cleveland. Cleveland's a team that's been a disappointment for many, many years. They love their Browns. They'll be there on Sundays for their Cleveland Browns. They might wear bags over their face, but they love the Browns. Detroit. a lowly franchise, a terrible franchise, maybe the one franchise in the NFL where I feel the most for their fans that have had to suffer through the agony of being a Detroit Lion fan, where you have good players like Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders, and you waste their careers and get absolutely nothing out of them, but love their Detroit Lions. They'll show up to the Superdome. Just kidding. It's actually the Metrodome, right? The Metrodome there
it's
in Detroit?
Ford Field.
No, the old one, though. The Silverdome.
Silverdome.
I was making reference to the old one. The Silverdome just
collapsed.
Yeah, it did collapse. That's right. Wasn't the snow that collapsed it?
That was Minnesota.
It was Minnesota. Wrong dome up in the
that
north.
That was the Hubert H.
I don't think
Humphrey
it did collapse.
Metrodome.
It was taken down.
I think there was a dome that collapsed because of the snow.
The roof that came down was the Metrodome.
Yeah.
But that you did have issues with Ford Field with the roof at one point, but it also, I think, at that point, they were already moving out.
So I asked that question. Is the one in 713-780 ESPN, by the way, our text line's down. Call us up. 713-780-3776. Are you a Houston sports fan? Are you a lifelong Houstonian? You pull for Houston sports, but you hate the Houston Texans.
Here's the thing. I think that throughout my time doing this job here, we've run the gamut and the full spectrum of the people that have jumped off the bandwagon and why. And I think some people started with Bill O'Brien. Some people started with the Hopkins trade. Other people were completely disgusted with the Kansas City game and the way that they went from the pure euphoria of thinking you were going to your first ever conference championship to have Lucy pull the football out from under you when you were trying to kick it and fall on your ass and realize not only are we not doing that, but we are going to find the most Texan way to do that so we can be made fun of the entire offseason. Yeah. Then you parlay it. Some people will attach their wagon to Jack Easterby and say, no matter what he does, no matter what he still is doing now, which is different than what he was doing previously, the fact that he still walks into those four walls and those doors every day on Kirby really bothers people. And I think that then you look at even the current where people were ready to come back and they look at Culley and they say, you know what? It's just misstep after misstep. The coaching search, another misstep. Cal McNair, a flipping joke. I can't handle it. I can't deal with it. I can't handle it. They're all associated with my city, my hometown, my favorite team. Everybody's got their hot buttons and their reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of like when you said this and brought this up.
But hold on real quick. Like all those things that you brought up, that's not unique to the Houston Texans. Like every other organization
also has
that.
No, it's magnified because there's multiples. It's like
So do the Lions. So do the Browns.
I don't think to that level.
Ooh.
I don't think you trade Calvin Johnson in his prime.
And no, he just retires in his prime.
Well, eventually he does, right. But I think that's a whole lot different because that's his choice. But as an organization, if you chose to trade Calvin Johnson, it would be a totally different way that you were perceived by your fan base.
I can't think of anything like that in my lifetime for the Lions, but what they would do is they would have extended Bill O'Brien.
That would have been painful,
too. And
you
hate Bill O'Brien.
Right.
Like,
I mean, they did extend their worst GM in franchise history.
Which was Matt Millen,
right?
Right.
Heck of a guy. The Texans have had their reasons of why you're disgusted with them, right? But, like, that disgust transferring and transitioning into hate, I find to be curious. And, look, every organization has their woes, right? And then it might not be, well, because you have Jack Easterby or you traded a prime receiver in their prime. Look, Kansas City just traded a prime receiver, but they're good. Green Bay just traded a prime receiver, but they're good. Like, so Patriots have traded really, really good players that are probably just slightly past their prime because they don't want to pay them all the money. So, like, trading good players from an organization isn't unique to the Houston
Texans. But I'm
saying,
when you parlay all the things that I mentioned, it's like everybody has a boiling point,
right? Yeah,
but
the Texans have been a playoff team and have won division titles far more recently than other teams.
We talked about this being a football town, and people don't expect just division championships and a playoff win here or there. They expect more. And if that's what you did one year, the next year they expect more. And then when you start stacking and racking the kind of just negativity that I mentioned and the fact that with each one of those, it's like death by 1,000 paper cuts. And then all of a sudden you hit an artery with one of them and people go, you know what? That's it. I throw up my hands and I can't. I can't because of Easterby. I can't because of Deshaun. I can't because of Bill O'Brien. I can't because of the Kansas City game. I can't because you traded D-Hop. And then what you got in return. Some people still are upset with the Tunsil trade when you didn't know how that was going to turn out. But because again, you gave up too much. But I think that at a certain point, when you say that there are fan bases that have endured some of these things.
No, I mean, I think there's fan bases that have
I don't think any franchise's fan base has endured in a small window of time all the things that I just mentioned.
I mean, the Texans were a playoff team, what, 5 years ago? Like, there's been teams that haven't been to a playoff in over decades. I mean, the Cowboys have won how many games?
Embarrassed.
Cowboys have won how many games, playoff games, in the last two decades? One, I think. Or they haven't been to a conference title and whatever. Like, they've been embarrassed as well. They've had their owner paying off women that he's been sleeping with out of, you know, extramarital affairs. They hate Jerry Jones as a GM. Like, you can look at every single team and you have an element of egg on your face or an element of embarrassment. And the Texans might have happened all in a very short bunch of time. But to act like other NFL teams, especially struggling NFL teams, haven't had
Not this many things. Not these many things. The embarrassment and the negativity that they have put. You say egg on your face?
Yeah.
They have had crap on their face. They have had their nuts kicked in. They have had every single time they are the laughing stock for more than just football.
But it hasn't
been
that
franchise.
Long.
And it translates to the city. And the fan base goes, you know what? I don't need all this. I can't take this because it isn't just about football. It's about Jerry Jones would never have traded DeAndre Hopkins for a bowl of soup.
But he fired Jimmy Johnson.
But they still had a level of winning. And then when he replaced Jimmy Johnson, he replaced him with a guy that he felt was going to at least do things his way. But also, he still had a winning football team around him.
Not always. But he hasn't in the last two decades.
I mean, look, I'm just telling you, I don't think fan bases have endured this much in this shorter period of time on this many different levels to have them have to endure embarrassment and just all of the different laughing stock that they've become across the league, no matter how bad they've played football.
No, I think that the fact that it's happened all in a very short period of time, like it certainly magnifies it. But I think it's naive to act like other teams around the National Football League haven't had their fair share of embarrassment. The Raiders had tons of embarrassment last year. They still made the playoffs. You can go around the league where there's been tons of, like, the Miami Dolphins have their dude meeting with a yacht, figuring out a way to, like, bring in Tom Brady when he's not allowed to, and then Brian Flores sues them. Like, there's examples of that all throughout the league. We're just not as closely to it.
Those things are more close. Not the Raiders. Take the Raiders out of it. But
why? We're talking about the entire NFL,
as it translates to the overall discussion. I'm saying that if it means that you're trying to win, you're trying to do these things because you're trying to win, I take the Raiders out of it because of the off the field stuff. But I'm saying if you're trying to win and you go out and you're doing things which are trying to make your team better or have a better chance to win, fan bases are going to be okay with that, whether it's legal, illegal, or they succeed or they don't. But obviously they're not going to be pleased with what the Raiders did and what they went through. But when you look at it and say, I don't think that Bill O'Brien was making moves to try and get better when you traded the best receiver in football, didn't get anything for him. You gave away too much to get. I understand that they thought he was trying to get better by getting Laramie Tunsil.
Gave up too much. Why would he have? I want to ask you. I want to push you back. Push back on that. But if you're a lifelong Houstonian, you're a Houston sports fan. You love the Astros. You love the Rockets. Maybe you love the Astros or the Oilers back in the day. Maybe you used to love the Houston Texans 4 or 5 years ago. But I was taken back, and people on our Twitch right now saying this too, saying I hate the Texans as well. So this isn't unique. I think there's a decent percentage of people in this city that we're talking to right now that hate the Houston Texans. Why do you hate the
Texans?
Tell us why. And is the city of Houston hateful to their NFL team more than any other city around the NFL? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We're having the conversation. Why does Houston hate the Texans? Not speaking for everybody, but there's a good population of the Houston sports fan that hates the Houston Texans. I was talking to one of them the other day. Our Twitch, there's obviously Houston sports fans or sports fans, they hate the Houston Texans. You had King of Twitch say lifelong native, and they are an embarrassment. E said they are dead to me, always will be. So I guess he's saying that there's nothing they can do that'll bring them back. Screech saying Texans fans had to deal with all the Oilers leaving, so maybe that is part of the reason. But like, okay, I get that. Like, there's jaded Houston football fans. Oilers are gone. That stinks. They love the Oilers. They'll forever hate Bud Adams. But the McNair family brought football back to Houston. People loved Bob McNair. A good chunk of people loved Bob McNair. people loved the Houston Texans for a good period of time. They were selling out each and every game for really up until recently. They think the COVID year and then last year was their first like real season that they weren't selling out. And then they've lost a good chunk of their fans. So it's like it's more recent than all the two decades of the Houston Texans history.
It hasn't been start to finish.
No, so I don't think it's fair to say that the like obviously Houston football fans are jaded because the Oilers left. If you were around for the Oilers, so you have a little bit of that chip on your shoulder when it comes to football. But they
you
were all football, in yeah. on the Texans
for a while.
You got
football back, and you were giddy when they came back. I don't think that factors into this discussion.
Yeah. Todd says the Texans could have fired Easterby last year and salvaged 25% of the fan base. I think that's too high. I really do. Like, if we're just, like, let's eliminate the people
at that point
still
in
love
time,
the Texans.
It's different now, but at that point in time, it might have been that high.
And that's also, I agree, the timeline matters here. At that point in time, potentially, at this point in time, I think Easterby's been kind of hidden to where he's not as big a factor, maybe still some, but not to those numbers. Now, like, I would also, like, Easterby's not going anywhere. Like, Jack Easterby could have been fired whenever Deshaun Watson was, like, doing his little trade demand before the sexual misconducts came out. It would have been a very easy thing for Cal McNair to do. It would have been very easy that you hire Nick Caserio and you push Jack Easterby out the door. Cal McNair wants Jack Easterby around. He's not going anywhere. And Nick Caserio is comfortable with Jack Easterby around. He's not going anywhere.
No, because they've worked together in the past, too. And I think that they found out, they found a common ground. They found a happy place, right? I don't think when Caserio came in, he knew what to expect from Easterby other than the fact that he kind of in the back of his mind felt like, I kind of owe this guy the benefit of the doubt because he got me the job. He literally got me the job when the search firm did not have me on the list and I wasn't supposed to get it. So I got to figure out and sort out what I'm going to do with him and how this is going to work. After a year's time, because they had worked together in the past, somehow, some way, they found a happy medium to where they could peacefully coexist. You're right. Owners have their favorites. When you're a favorite of the owner, and look, Rick Smith was a favorite of Bob McNair, and he stuck around probably longer than he should have because of it. So if you are in with the good graces of ownership, there are certain things, no matter how much as a fan base you hate, you are not you may not outlive them, and you certainly aren't going to be the reason why they get rid of them, because they like their yes men, and Jack is a yes man to Cal.
Look,
that's just a fact.
And there's also like numbers that back this up. I mean, just go look. You can eye test it first and foremost. Go look at how many people are at NRG. Go look at how many people are in the tailgate scene. The numbers, the ticket numbers would back it up. The season ticket wait list is
gone. The fact
that
they are selling group tickets now, which they never did in the first 15 plus years or however long it took, is a pure and total reaction to how bad the fan base is pissed off with the product and the organization.
The evidence exists. Now, being mad at the organization versus hate are like two different things. And like I would ask the question too, 713-780-ESPN, is there a certain element of you're rooting for the Texans to lose? Because if you hate the Texans, you probably don't want them to do well. Are you part of that? You rooting for the Texans to lose and eliminate the whole embrace the suck. It's good for the organization. Like, you just do not want the Texans to have success. 713-780-3776. The question that I had for you is the Bill O'Brien, the Hopkins trade, all of that. I don't believe that Bill O'Brien's making that trade with the idea of, I want to get worse at football. He thought that was in the best interest of the team when it came to wins. Now, I believe that he was an idiot in doing it. I feel like it wasn't the smart thing to do when it came to winning football games. But everything that Bill O'Brien did was like an overpay and an effort to try to save his butt and win football games. I don't think
I don't think that was
a spot where, like, I'm getting rid of DeAndre Hopkins because I don't like him.
Oh.
I just think it was DeAndre Hopkins being Bill O'Brien being a moron when it came to that trade.
No, I think that there was. I think that there was a personal vendetta that he was playing out saying, I'm more powerful than you. I don't like what you do. And so, therefore, as the boss, I can get rid of you. And I believe wholeheartedly that that was the crux of why he made the decision he made. Now, a lot of people are going to look at what you got in return, but I think where it all started from was the fact that you took one of the best receivers in the game at that time, and you decided to let a personal issue get in the way of him playing for your franchise where he was happy playing. Sure, he was going to want money at a certain point, but he was happy playing, and he was doing what he was doing for you. The fact that you moved him on told me and told a lot of other people and people that I know that said the only reason why he did this was he couldn't, it pissed him off what D-Hop did away from the football field.
Now, that report came out. I think that was a way of justifying the trade when it's all said and done. But you mentioned the contract in which DeAndre Hopkins wanted. I don't believe that the Houston Texans wanted to pay a receiver top-end money because they don't feel like it's the right thing to do in the NFL. We've seen examples of this post the fact. Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, the most recent examples. They looked at Deshaun Watson as, okay, you're going to make our team better in the aggregate, even if we get rid of DeAndre Hopkins. And they made other moves. They got a second-round pick. They got David Johnson. David Johnson had negative value, had no business being in that trade. And let's not forget, Stephon Diggs was traded in that very same offseason for a first-round pick. So Bill O'Brien got screwed there and didn't get a maximum value for DeAndre Hopkins. But Minnesota traded Stephon Diggs because they believed it was better to get him off the books. They believed it was better to draft a receiver in the first round. Actually turned out pretty good for Minnesota. If the Texans would have made the Minnesota trade, I think we're looking at the DeAndre Hopkins trade in a much different light.
But then I agree with you that he's trying to get better at football. I don't think the trade that he made...
Well, I mean, he got a second rounder. It's not as good as a first, man. But it's not terrible. It's not
for a guy of that level
far
of,
down the scale.
That no matter how much you don't want to pay a receiver, you got to get more than you got
for
him.
Well, the secondary part...
To get to your point of, if you're trying to better your football team, you got to get more than a second-round pick for DeAndre Hopkins.
Completely agree. Like, he miscalculated the market. But I don't think he was making that trade with, like, okay, now I'm going to lose more football games because I don't like DeAndre Hopkins. The dude, like, overbought everything he could. He spent two firsts on Laremy Tunsil and a second for Kenny Stills. He had no sense of the trade market. I felt like it was going to – he felt that it was going to make his team better in the long run. Not paying him the contract, you get a pick. He thought that David Johnson still had value, which was moronic. Like, I agree that all of the decisions that he made were stupid. Second rounder miscalculated the market. David Johnson had negative value when you're – throwing him in at a trade because you think he's still going to be very good. But I don't think that Bill O'Brien made that trade with the idea of like, oh, now I want to lose more games.
No, not that he wants to lose more games, but he wanted to show who's boss, and it really got under his skin because he's that dictator, that old school coach, my way or the highway guy. And it just got under his skin, and it pissed him off that that guy didn't practice the way he wanted him to practice every day. That guy, whether the baby mama story is true or not, that those kind of things, that kind of behavior, and no one was able to make sure that he corrected it because of the fact that he is a premier receiver, and no one was willing to do that, including himself. So he decided, I'll show everybody, this is my ship. You're getting off of it, and I'm kicking you off of it no matter what it whatever I get in return. So I'm not saying he was trying to lose games, but I think that his philosophy and thinking was not centered around I'm going to win more games or try to get better by getting rid of him. I believe that this was his way of saying, I'll show you I am in charge here, and I'm not taking that anymore, and that's got to change. And he did it at a time where almost a knee-jerk reaction, because it was coming off the Kansas City debacle in the playoffs, where he had already had a ton of attention pointed his way for negativity and bad decisions and the way that they orchestrated that
loss. So why would he trade a star? Like, if he has a lot of negativity, he's carried it. Hold on. If he has a lot of negativity, hold on. If he has a lot of negativity, because I'm asking you a question. If he has a lot of negativity and has a lot of negative PR against him, why would he trade away his star?
Because doing that and him being able to say we're going forward in a positive direction, starting fresh next season, was in his look. I can't speak for him directly, but if I'm answering the question, it deflected from all the different on-field coaching decisions that he made that were moronic, and instead brought to the fact that look, I'm going to do things differently my way next year, and therefore he's out, we're in. This is how we're doing it. That's how we're going about our business. That would be my answer to the question.
If you're worried about your PR though, and like what people are saying about you, you don't make that trade.
Well, but we already know he does. He ran through the damn tunnel to saying you suck too.
But if you care,
and the way he attacked the media for attacking him for legitimate questions.
But if he's worried about that, you're not trading your star player. The only reason that you're trading your star player is because you think it makes you a better football team in the long run. Was he right? No, absolutely not. But like, it's getting sidetracked to the part here too of like, why does this city, why is there a pocket, why is there a percentage of this city? Because look, I mean, training camp starts tomorrow. This is a very exciting time. NFL teams, hope springs eternal, right? We're going to be Super Bowl contenders. We're going to compete for the division. And most of the city is like, okay, let's go Davis Mills. Let's go Lovie Smith. We believe in Nick, all of this stuff. But there is a good chunk that literally hates the Houston Texans. They don't care about the Houston Texans, and it's you described a lot of the reasons of why it got that way, and like it's very true. But to go to the extent of hating the organization and rooting bad things for the organization, it's crazy how it's gotten to that point.
Here's the thing, too, Jeremy. Why I said because it's all stacked up on them, right? Like teams, whether you do that with a coach, right? You get rid of a coach, you finally get rid of him. But the understanding and the expectation from your fan base is you are going to handle it the right way to get the best candidate for the job. Then when you start even considering a coach that's never coached football other than high school and start telling – and you, the rumors start coming out there that he has not only been interviewed, but he is a finalist, that he could possibly get the job, then people are going, what the hell's going on here? And then when you parlay it with all the stuff that Bill O'Brien did that had them scratching their head and going, what are you doing and why are you not trying to do what – real professional organizations are supposed to do when bettering your team, that's when I felt like people really got just so, like, steaming hot mad that they were like, I'm out. I'm throwing up the white flag. I can't do this anymore.
But it's fascinating that you go from being an organization that 3 years ago, they were a playoff team in 2019. Ooh. Like, you were close to beating the Kansas City Chiefs and having home field advantage in the conference championship game. And in that short of a span, there's, what, 15, 20% of the city that are football fans that hate the Houston Texans.
There is something that makes you different, though, than, you know, a lot of the teams you mentioned early on in this conversation, Jeremy. When you talk about the Lions, you talk about the Browns or the Jaguars. The Texans flirted with being a really good football team for a fairly long period of time, but what were you missing? A quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But you were still pretty good despite that. Now you get your quarterback, and, you know, maybe you got a chance to get over the hump. And then just like that, you switch from being this relevant team that's close and added the piece you had been missing for so long to being the Lions, the Browns, the Jags, and making, while you haven't done it for the same period of time, elite-level stupid decisions.
Yeah.
Like, the decisions that they've made in the last couple of years are up there with those organizations.
Now, like, the DeAndre Hopkins trade, I'm not arguing that that was a good trade. Let's be very clear. But that wasn't that far off for what Minnesota got. Minnesota got a late first-round draft pick for Stephon Diggs, one of the top five-ish receivers in the NFL. DeAndre Hopkins, you could argue, was better than top five-ish in the NFL. They got an early second-round pick. Now, where Bill O'Brien went wrong was the David Johnson aspect. Like, just throwing a third instead of David Johnson. But a second and a third versus a late first, like an early second and third versus a late first, like, there's a difference there, but it's not huge. It's not wide.
But it's also the fact that you are trading away one of the premier receivers and players in the game at his peak, and people are asking why.
Well, it wasn't, like, his peak.
Why, well, okay. I mean, but you understand what I'm saying.
Because he wanted a contract extension, right?
Like, we don't know when it was coming.
So he wanted, let's say, 4 years. Years, you trade him 19. Let's look at DeAndre Hopkins' last couple of years.
But on the flip side of what you said, parlaying it off of what I said, how I was trying to answer from a Bill O'Brien perspective, from a fan base perspective, if coming off of the embarrassment of doing what you did on the football field, you look at it and say, first line of business is to trade away one of the best players in the league, that's not going to win fans over. That's not going to want them to say, I'll bide my time, I'll hang with you, I'll tough this one out with you. And then when you start having the other things start steamrolling after that, and even the David Johnson thing, you're right, because now everybody's looking at it already pissed off. And now every time he touched the ball, they're like, see, this is, and again,
he had that negative value.
you get to that level of point of no return, boiling point, and then you just bail.
Let's keep this going. A lot of comments on Twitch that I want to get to as well, some reaction on this. 713-780-ESPN. The text lines are down. So if you want to get in, you got to call our HR&B listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Quite the conversation to have a day before the Texans open up training camp for the 2022 season. People hate the Texans. People in this city hate the Texans. I said that maybe there's like 15 or 20% of Houston sports fans or sports fans in the city that hate the Texans. And King of Twitch said 15 to 20% LOL, more like 40 to 50%. What percentage of sports fans in Houston hate the Texans? Like, what's a realistic answer? Cuz I think
it's
the
not
Twitch,
that high.
The Twitch,
it's not.
Twitch is a little bit more anti-Texan than I think the general population, if we're being completely honest. I would say 10%. I would say 10%.
I'm going to say 15 to 18%.
That's sad.
Yeah, I'm gonna say 15 to 18%.
Right? That's sad.
Yeah, but it's true. But I think that number was a lot higher a year ago, because we didn't know if Deshaun Watson was going to be traded. We didn't know how the scenario was going to play out. We didn't know how he was going to do in his second draft, Nick Caserio being that guy, when we already saw what he did with a limited amount of picks, and there were question marks. You saw some signs of positivity from Nick Caserio, so just like us, you weren't willing to turn your back on him just yet. But then you also had that, like I always said, the black cloud was the Deshaun Watson situation, and that shade underneath it was being brought to you by Jack Easterby. And now I thought a lot of the dust had settled, not just from Easterby finding some happy place that's out of the way to Caserio showing you that he could draft and also trade Deshaun Watson in a very capable manner, but also the fact that the players that you got look like they have true potential, look like they could truly be good. I thought that a lot of people would be ready to jump back on, get their red, white, and blue back on and say, I like where this team is going. Regardless of what we've been through, there's now suddenly a light I didn't see before, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, to that end, I think it's a really interesting question. What is it going to look like at games this year? Is it going to look like people have come around a little bit?
Because last year we saw pictures towards the end of the year as what? 50% capacity?
It was sparse.
40% capacity?
But I think when you're a rebuilding team, having a full draft class starts the process. I'm certainly not telling you it's going to be full, but will it look better?
I think so.
I think that's a great gauge, too.
I think that as a gauge is synonymous with the approval rating of the Texans, right? Last year, week 15, week 14, the approval rating of the Texans was, you know, basically rock bottom. It was maybe a 1 or 2 compared to being a 0 after you trade, or you had the Deshaun Watson trade demands and the sexual misconducts. I think now it's improved to like a 5. I'm talking about on a scale of 1 to 100. I'm not talking on a scale of 1 to 10. Like, I think it's gotten marginally better. It's still not very good, but marginally better than it was 3/4 of the way through 2021.
I think here's another gauge that you got to factor in too, Jeremy and Brendan, is the fact that you can't gauge it on week one. Week one, everybody's hope springs eternal, and you know that opening game means a ton, especially in this city, and everybody's going to be there. But when you first see the schedule and the results of it show that you're probably not going to be a playoff team, are they going to bail and run for the hills, or are they going to say, this is still my squad? I like the way these young guys are competing. I like the fact that we're in games and not getting our doors blown off. I'm sticking with this squad. That's going to be the first true barometer. Are they still there when your record isn't? Mm-hmm. That's going to be big.
Week 6 or 7, when you start 2-4 or 1-5, something like that. T-Matt on Twitch says, what percentage of these Texans haters were actual fans and not just Cowboy fans? That's an interesting question, because there was always a good amount of Cowboy fans in Houston, even when the Oilers were around. Now, it wasn't as big a population, but then whenever you didn't have football in Houston for about a decade, it became a much bigger population that were Cowboy fans in this city. But then when the Texans came, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to turn my allegiances back to Houston. But you always had at the corner of your eye, you're looking to see how Dallas is doing. You're looking to see how the Cowboys are doing. So it's very easy whenever the Texans start to struggle, and there's the embarrassment of riches that you talked about, or the riches of embarrassment, I should say, where you have the bad trades, you have people in the organization that are leading the organization that you despise, you don't trust, you can't stand. And it's very easy to jump off the bandwagon being a Cowboy fan, and now you turn into just, okay, well, yeah, of course I've always been a Cowboy fan, or now I'm a Bengal fan for some really weird reason.
Look, I think that the one thing probably truer than most other sports is when you are loyal to your football team and you have true loyalty, you're loyal no matter what. So if you're a Texans fan, then you're going to be a Texans fan the rest of your life. If you're a Cowboys fan, the same thing. I saw it because I retweeted some person out there on Twitter that had said over the last 15, 20 years, the Texans have more playoff wins than the Cowboys. They have this more than the Cowboys. And Cowboys fans lost their bleeping minds. And they couldn't digest it, and they couldn't accept it, and they didn't realize that, look, I'm just creating exactly what you just did. I wanted to see the reaction. I wanted to see the discussion. I wanted to see if people really realized realistically where both franchises were. But that then they just got all bent out of shape. That's why I don't think you can be both. You can either be one or the other, but if you're a Cowboys fan living in Houston, I think you're still going to be a Cowboys fan. You might watch the Texans. You know you're going to see all their games. You might comment on them, but I still believe that you're always going to bleed blue, and that would be the Cowboys blue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fascinating time in the city, too. Like, that's maybe that's the better question, though, is like, where's the loyalty, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Cleveland, maybe you're frustrated with the Browns, but you're loyal. You're going to go to the stadium. Maybe you're a Lion fan, but you're going to wear a Matt Stafford jersey and be loyal to him, even if it's the Rams and it's the wrong color.
And it looked like someone peed on it.
Yeah, it looked like someone peed on it. Yep. But whenever the Texans faced some adversity, and look, the adversity, as you painted out, was large. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no argument with that. It was large. I pushed back a little bit saying that there's adversity throughout the entire NFL, but we live in the city of Houston. We know the challenges and the adversity the Texans have had with all the things you laid out, the Hopkins trade, the Easterby effect, Deshaun Watson wanting out, then sexual misconducting every female in the city of Houston. So, like, we've lived through that. We've experienced that in this city. So now you have people, a good chunk of people, that have literally have completely jumped off. Yep. Like, I hate the Texans. I have apathy towards the Texans. I'm disappointed. I'm sad. I don't trust them. I'm mad. All of those emotions. But while you have that emotion, how come you don't have loyal Texans fans, whereas you have loyal Browns fans, loyal Lions fans, loyal Jets fans, et cetera, et cetera?
I think it's more because of the actions of the team that showed you that were not necessarily it's twofold, but I don't think that they were conducted the way they feel like other teams would conduct themselves, especially on non-football issues or on the field issues, as well as on the field issues. Like, to your point about, are they trying to win? Are they trying to better themselves? That's one thing where you would expect they're always either trying to do that, or they're in the harsh reality that the fans don't want to accept that it's time to rebuild because we're never going to get there. Mm-hmm. But then when you see, how did they handle Deshaun Watson? How did they handle their coaching search? How did they handle Bill O'Brien probably surviving way longer than he should have, and then giving him the general manager's job on top of that, to see that he could completely be inept at that too.
Yeah.
I think those are things that really, because like I said, it means something to know that from a national perspective, every person we had on this show that we asked every time we turn on SportsCenter, when you mentioned the two words Houston Texans, it got a giggle. It got a chuckle. You became the laughing stock of the entire league, and that's not something any fan of any team wants.
The two teams we've used as like laughing stock examples are the Lions and Browns, right?
Yeah.
Can I point?
Jets, Jaguars, if you want to throw them
Bears
in there too.
Bears lately could get thrown in there.
If you look at a lot of those teams, what else does the city have going on right now in terms of sports?
You're talking about those cities specifically?
It's Cleveland and Detroit certainly don't have anything. Jacksonville doesn't have another team they care about.
Right.
The Cavs got better last year by a long
But for the most part, outside of a couple years here or there, the Cavaliers, you know, outside of LeBron years, have not been much of anything.
Yeah, Guardians have been okay at times.
The Guardians, they're like what we were talking about, a mid-level team.
Yeah.
They're happy to win games more than they lose and have a chance to make a playoff.
They've been in the playoffs last 3 years.
But you have a championship-caliber team here, and a team that's not just championship-caliber, but like has been the top of the MLB, essentially, mm-hmm. for, you know, 5 years now.
The pendulum has swung.
And I think that makes it easier to give up on your football team.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Not everything, but it helps.
Yeah, I certainly. Like, if you have 100% attention and you're spending 75-80% of it on the Astros, what does that leave for the rest? What does that leave for the Texans? But, like, we kind of, like, made jumping off, like, you're loyal towards your organization in the city okay. Like, okay, the Texans made a bunch of bad decisions. It's bad. There's reason to dislike them, hate them, be mad at them, et cetera, all those emotions that we've talked about. But then if those same people that are jumping off are then jumping back on whenever you're a Super Bowl contender again, is that acceptable? Is that okay?
I think from an organizational standpoint, it's highly acceptable because their money spends just like anybody else.
But
they're going to buy tickets and jerseys,
not even the
and they're going to support the team. That's great.
Not even the money, though. Not even the money. Watching the games, rooting for them to win, being engaged with the Texans. So you don't need to spend money to do that.
But it's better than the room for
somebody
else.
No, but I'm saying right now when they're not. Like, those people that are not engaged and dislike the Texans right now, 4 years, the Texans are a Super Bowl contender. It's cool to just jump right back on?
I don't know if it's cool or not, but I think that it's acceptable in this city because we've already talked about how many transplants we have in the city of Houston. And transplants in the city of Houston stay loyalty to their teams until they shouldn't. Right? I think there were a lot of transplant baseball fans in this city that had other teams. But the minute that their team right under their nose started to get good and then World Series good and do the things they were doing, it was real easy to jump on board with that too, because they're not from here originally and they had their own set of standards with teams that they were loyal to coming in, but they could be swayed. And the same way, you're waiting to have that same thing happen in football. And you, like you said, only a few short years ago, it was easy to watch Texans games and start liking this team because they were winning. Yeah. But we also know it's a fair weather city in a lot of ways. And the minute the teams start losing, and we saw it with the Rockets and we saw it with the Texans, whether we mentioned all the things we mentioned or not, people jumped off that Rockets bandwagon real quick, too, the minute they started losing.
Big C just said, I've literally seen Texans fans walk into a bathroom, take off a Texans jersey, and put on a Cowboys jersey. I mean, Paul's wearing a half Mariner, half Astro shirt today, so how crazy is that? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, everybody, every reporter out there, every talking baseball head, your Passons, your Rosenthals, your Haymans, we love them all. They're all mentioning the Astros are going to potentially trade a major league arm. Don't say Jake Odorizzi. He has zero trade value. But we're talking Luis Garcia. We're talking Christian Javier. We're talking Jose Urquidy. Keedy, you pick one. If the Astros trade one of those guys, who would be the one that you would pick? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, talk to you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Been telling you about them forever and a day because of the fact that they get results, they do what they say they're going to do, and they're going to have you feeling better in no time. That's what you're all about, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you just want to make sure that you feel great, you have energy, and you accomplish things in your life that you need to get done, whether it be work-related, family-related, the gym, etc. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you're having issues, they have solutions, and they can get you on the right path to feeling great again. It starts with hormone therapy for men and women, and they have many different ways that you can administer it and reap the benefits of having more energy on a daily basis. You want to start with a little bit of a different approach? Start with a B12 shot like I get and see if that helps you, give you more energy. If you want to get on a workout program, I encourage you to do a full body composition analysis. It literally takes 60 seconds, but then you can chart your progress and do one every 3 or 4 weeks, especially at those times when you feel like I haven't lost weight this week. I don't feel the way that I had been feeling when I was making progress. But then you look at your results after the body comp and you say, oh, but my body fat is down. My muscle mass is up. I'm making the progress that I need to be making. That encourages me. You want to recover quicker, HGH peptide therapy. They have stuff for your smoothies and fat burners and all those things too. Two locations to better serve you. Start the process. Go to ApolloMH.com. See all the different ways they can help and sign up for your first appointment. When you go in, answer their questions honestly and tell them what you're trying to achieve. They're going to put you on a program that works. They're going to get you results too. They're good people doing great things. Check out the people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5.
Please stand by.